ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Everybody's talking about fuel. Whether you're in need of filling up the tank for the week and you're watching the dollars tick over at the Bowser, or you're watching weekend plans, holiday plans, business plans change. To help get your head around the latest, you can find Fuelcast in the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does Donald Trump's blockade in the Strait of Hormuz mean for our fuel supply? Well, it's not great. Today, Sol Kavenic, energy expert at MST Financial, on why we're facing a doomsday scenario that's been wargamed for decades. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Trump says the US military's blockade of ships entering or departing Iranian ports has begun.
The Prime Minister is returning to Southeast Asia this week, travelling to Brunei and Malaysia in an effort to secure ongoing fuel and fertiliser supplies amid the global energy crisis.
In a fiery social media post, Donald Trump threatening to blow to hell any Iranian vessel who fires at us or at peaceful vessels, and warning that no country who pays a toll to Iran will get safe passage.
We can't let a country blackmail or extort the world, because that's what they're doing. They're really blackmailing the world. We're not going to let that happen.
So the blockade threatened by Donald Trump is now in place. So we're going to consider what that means for us and our fuel supply. This will make the oil crisis worse, won't it? At least in the short term.
Well, that's right. So basically the oil market is now rewound to before the ceasefire and Trump's bombastic ultimatum was made. So we're back on an escalatory pathway for the conflict and for oil markets, except this time with Trump's blockade of Iran, the remaining 1 to 2 million barrels of oil that was still coming out of the strait, which was the Iranian barrels, that's now going to be stopped as well via the blockade. So it's taken an extra 1 to 2% off the global oil markets. Right now, there's no live fire or war on. We're still within this tentative ceasefire period, and so there's lower risk of direct attacks on oil infrastructure right now, but that could change at any moment.
All right, so the US is now stopping ships from leaving and entering ports in Iran. Now, this will be, won't it, a huge hit to Iran's economy, because more than 50% of its exports and actually most of its revenue comes from oil. Oil is simply everything to Iran, isn't it?
It's the vast majority of the government revenue and the foreign revenue for the country. The one caveat with that is, given the lag times involved in shipments of oil and payments, Iran's likely to still be receiving money from its oil customers for several weeks or even a few months before that actually dries up. But once it does dry up, it's going to be a massive impact on the regime's revenue and the Iranian economy.
All right, so it's going to hurt Iran's economy, but it's also going to harm everyone else's as well, right? This has implications that are not just one way.
Well, with the blockade, essentially what Trump is doing is making sure Iran feels the financial pain in addition to the rest of the world, which is suffering economically from the weaponization of energy and the blocking of the Strait of Hormuz. So before the blockade, we had about 11 to 13% of the world's oil offline. That increases to 13 to 15% with the blockade in place. So look, it's still a massive supply disruption. And on the demand side, it's equivalent to the demand drop we saw in 2020 in the wake of COVID. So that's the implied drop in economic activity around the world that would be needed to address this shortfall in oil supply. The difference in 2026 is the way that drop in activity is distributed around the world will be very different.
Yeah, because we weren't really driving around as much or flying anywhere during COVID. We're still going about our daily lives, aren't we, today? So very different time.
That's right. And I think back during COVID, it was the more developed economies like Australia which did the harshest lockdowns. Whereas now, more developed economies like Australia, we actually have a greater ability to pay for fuel. So we'll actually fare relatively better compared to more developing economies who can't pay, and they're actually going to go without even more.
All right, well, Seoul, Iran has promised to retaliate. It says no port in the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman will be safe. Now, these are all big oil-producing areas, aren't they? So it's a pretty serious and rather scary threat.
So what's most worrying now for oil markets is if this blockade develops into the conflict restarting and Iran directly attacking oil infrastructure and oil export infrastructure like ports, which they've threatened to do. And the reason for that is if you start to see more successful attacks on oil export infrastructure, what it means is even after the war ends and the Strait of Hormuz opens up, that will take months or even years to repair. So we end up with a shortage of oil that will last much, much longer than the end of the war. And that is actually a much scarier scenario for oil markets than just a short-term temporary disruption to the Strait of Hormuz, which could open up readily again once the conflict is resolved one way or another.
Okay, so the world's supply of oil is under great threat. So let's have a look now at what that means for supply here. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, he's in Asia trying to shore up supply in Brunei and Malaysia this week, Singapore last week.
Australia, of course, is at the front of the queue because of the strong relationship that we've built up with Singapore. But we live in very uncertain times.
And just noting that supply from Singapore for us is particularly vital, isn't it?
It is. Singapore is a major refining hub. They refine much more oil than they need domestically. And so what the government needs to do here is to make sure that that fuel is available for us to buy, because we are approaching crunch point now where up until today, we're still living off the oil that left the Strait of Hormuz before the war began. That's about to dry up. And what you're going to start to see is countries all over the region and around the world are going to start leaning on their political relationships, offering political favours and incentives to try and divert fuel away from Australia and to their countries. And that's why our government is engaging diplomatically now to try and fend that off and make sure that we can still compete and buy fuel on market and it's not taken away from us due to political reasons.
But that can't be guaranteed, can it? Because, I mean, I know Singapore relies on our LNG, of course, so we're in a good negotiating position, if you like, but the supply just can't be guaranteed, can it, from Singapore? And by the way, the Singaporean Prime Minister did not guarantee that. He just said he hoped that the supply would continue and he would work towards doing that, but that's not a guarantee exactly.
That is correct. So Australia has leverage because right now, as difficult as the oil market is, the LNG market is even more difficult situation, and many of these countries need our LNG even more than we need their fuel. And so that gives the Australian government leverage in these discussions. But to the extent that the government is not fully successful in its diplomatic approach here, then we are going to be potentially left short. And that's why you're starting to see already some signals from the government about demand management measures being taken place in Australia. You've seen the release of the advertising campaign.
The global fuel shortage is affecting us all. To keep us moving, the government has been working to secure Australia's fuel supply
and has essentially encouraging people to be more conservation conscious and use less fuel with their cars, you know, make sure your tyres are pumped up, etc.
Every little bit helps. For fuel saving tips, visit fuelplan.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
We're also going to see measures where government employees are asked to be working from home where they can, you know, more restrictive on government travel. This is the beginning on the path towards rationing. I hope and expect we won't get to the drastic stage of having to ration fuel and forcing people in cities to go without, etc. But we're at the beginning of the steps towards that end result. The fact that the government is starting these demand management approaches and strategies is a sign that behind the scenes, despite their calm words, there is some panic in the government. They realise a shortage could come and they realise their diplomatic efforts are not being fully successful. And so they do have to prepare for the contingencies that we might end up short of fuel, particularly next month.
Yeah, well, it's just spent $20 million on an ad campaign, so I guess that's not a sign of calmness.
Absolutely.
Well, so just lay it out for me. Chris Bowen, the Energy Minister, he says we're looking pretty good for the short term.
Since this war began, not a single cargo that we have expected to arrive in Australia has failed to arrive. Any cancellations of forward orders have been replaced and more.
For now, Australia's supply of liquid fuels is unimpeded, with 57 shipments en route. But overnight developments could risk supply in the near future.
Does it mean ongoing concerns, you know, in June and July? Sure. But we'll continue to manage those and I'll continue to give updates.
But in your view, in what month and when is crunch time?
So the beginning of crunch time is in the next week or so. So the very last tankers of crude from the Middle East that left before the war are due to arrive, including in Australia, I think, in the next week. And then that's the last of them. So that's when the real shortage begins. So the real crunch is going to come later this month and particularly in May. And right now, the government has, you know, according to their reporting, we have contracted for fuel to get us through most of May. The problem is that in a time of crisis, contracting for fuel does not necessarily mean the fuel is going to arrive. So the proof is going to be when the fuel actually arrives in Australia. And in a time of crisis, we will see governments all over the world pulling strings to try and divert that contracted fuel away from us. We do need a plan for the contingency that that fuel doesn't arrive, and the stock levels that we have, they're not readily available everywhere they need to be. So the truth is you'll start to see structural shortages well before our stock levels actually reach zero.
What about jet fuel? Because, of course, we are a nation of travellers.
That's right. So right now the most acute fuel shortage is in jet fuel, followed by diesel. And you're already starting to see some airports around the world, I think I've seen most recently in Italy, restricting flights. This is going to be a problem for Australia. So flights is probably one of the most critical areas that should be hit first.
Qantas is cutting back on some services as it reveals an expected $800 million increase to its fuel bill.
The next most important or the next most critical fuel will be diesel. And this has, I think, wider ramifications for the economy because so much of Australia's rural economy, particularly in agriculture and mining, relies on diesel to operate. I don't know if you're a vegetarian or not, but if you're not, if you have a chicken burger for lunch, the chicken patty in your chicken burger, it takes a cup of diesel through the supply chain to get that chicken patty on your burger. And if you have a beef burger, it's two cups of diesel, right? That just gives you an indication fuel is required for absolutely everything in our day-to-day lives. And when it's suddenly not available, the availability of everything, including a chicken burger for lunch, and the cost of everything goes up.
Now, just tell me then, Sol, before the war started, in Australia's big population centres, we were paying something like 160, 170 cents per litre for unleaded petrol, maybe 180 cents per litre for diesel. I guess what everyone wants to know is, will it return to that level at some point, or will we be stuck with these very high prices for a very long time?
There's simply no unscrambling of this egg, and the market is not going to go back to the way it was prior to the war. Oil prices are not going to return to back to where they were in January. Now, they can come down from their current pricing levels, but I don't think we can go back to what prices were before the war for at least a year or two, even after the war ends. People forget that this is the doomsday scenario for oil that's been war games since the 1970s, and it's now playing out.
Sol Kavanagh is an energy expert at MST Financial. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.